This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Talk money to me.
Hello and welcome to Talk Money to Me. This is your need to know financial podcast. I'm Candace Burke.
And I'm Felicity Thomas. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're bringing you another one of our special guest interviews. So today, we're actually joined by Frank Yu from Ali Bridge Group and Julia Scarafoli, one of our colleagues from Shaw & Partners. Firstly, a little bit about Frank. So Frank founded Ali Bridge Group in 2013 and is the Chief Executive Officer and Chief Investment Officer. In this capacity, Frank is responsible for setting firm-wide strategic initiatives and leading investment objectives across high-impact life sciences transactions in private and public markets globally.
What a wrap. And I guess a little bit more background on Frank. You know, you are regarded as one of the top private equity healthcare fund managers globally. And that's because his mandate and his skill set is really investing in world-leading late-stage life science companies, which fulfill significant unmet medical needs and most of all, help save people's lives. So in doing so, Frank has produced a gross IRR of 45% for his investors across his several funds since 2010. That is very impressive. And I guess to help unpack the exciting opportunities that we're going to be hearing from Frank in the life science space, we're also joined, like Felicity said, with one of our colleagues here at Shaw & Partners, Julius, who is a senior private wealth advisor, like us here at Shaw & Partners, but has a few more grey hairs than us. He's got about 20 years under his belt at Shaw & Partners, and we're going to be hearing his version of how he met Frank, and I'm sure Frank's version of how he met Julius, and also we'll be asking Julius his thoughts on the private equity space in general. So welcome, gentlemen, both to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Candace and Felicity. It's a great honor to be here and great pleasure to share my experience with you all.
Thank you, Candace and Felicity. It's a joy to be here doing this podcast with you both.
Awesome. We're very excited to have you both on the show today, and we can't wait to hear your thoughts on the PE market in general, as well as your expertise in the healthcare sector. But before we do, quickly, here comes our disclaimer. So our chat today is not personal advice. Even though we're registered financial advisors at Shaw & Partners, please note that the podcast and the content discussed does not constitute financial advice, nor is it a financial product. Now, everything discussed is based on facts that we know at the time of this recording to be correct, and the date is the 18th of May 2022. All right, now that that's out of the way, to start things off, we've been lucky enough to be introduced to you, Frank, by Julius. So I know there's a bit of a funny story about how you two met. So Julius, can you give us a bit of background on how you actually met Frank and what drew you to him?
Yeah, so I met Frank through a very well-respected investment banker, fund manager out of Melbourne. We flew to Hong Kong during the Art Basel conference, Credit Suisse Private Banking Conference, back in May 2019. We went to visit the world's leading fund managers, which basically all congregate for that one specific time of year. We met Frank, funnily enough, in a restaurant in the Conrad. Sat next to Frank. It's not always easy to get a meeting with Frank. It was just purely tailing the back of this very close friend and mentor of mine who had known Frank for and followed his work for 10 years throughout his banking career at Goldman's and through his time at Ali Bridge, and didn't get much of a background on Frank pre the dinner, but I sat next to Frank, obviously, besides his in-depth knowledge on Burgundy wines, he absolutely blew me away on the type of world-leading human impact, life-saving medical device, telehealth, med tech companies that he had been investing in his career as a specialist invested in healthcare. And it just became more and more apparent that as human population continues to grow and therefore more and more problems continue to grow in parallel with that, that there is a very much thirst and need for more of these instruments and companies to save human lives and keep obviously human beings out of hospital and and you know, protect themselves, insurance companies alike. The type of things he was coming up with, which would basically, we don't really see much of this in Australia. It's Silicon Valley in Europe. He's talking about things like detecting cancer early, or a one-hour procedure, minimal invasive procedure that would prevent you being in ICU for 2 weeks. And this would literally be a very, very precise surgery that would take an hour, and you could literally walk home. And therefore, I just blown away thinking that, well, if these people can get a surgery done that's going to save their life within an hour, which accelerates the, well, even removes almost the whole impact of healing just through this minimal invasive procedure that all doctors moving forward will be using. I was just absolutely blown away. And I thought, this is something that we really need to get access to in Australia. There's a huge hole of diversity in this country. I mean, Australia, we're really, really huge in resources. We're providing the world's finished products and resources. We're taking care of that need. And then domestically, where our GDP huge contribution is property. But outside of that, what are we investing in? And, you know, I know that all of us here know, you know, these world-leading companies, CSL, Cochlear, ResMed, Sonic Healthcare. But besides those companies to get access to as an investor, where else do you go? And the types of world-leading investments that Frank was making in terms of FDA-approved businesses making, meaningful revenue, saving human lives and delivering significant unmet medical needs are a must in not just our clients' portfolios, but I think investors in Australia wide in general. So, look, I was blown away. Walked after I met Frank for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and a huge knowledge of what he was doing, and also a huge knowledge after that of his Burgundy wines. Went back to the hotel, did a full-fledged due diligence on him as a profile and his website, and I was having a look at the investments that he had done in terms of his co-investment roles with Bezos Expeditions, Gates Foundation, Bristol Myers, Merck, Johnson & Johnson, some of these Silicon Valley-based businesses that we would never ever get access to being here in Australia. And I thought he was just my gatekeeper, my unicorn to basically grab the horns on and open this up to all my client base and Shorts client base here in Australia.
Well, should we just wrap the podcast now? Because that was a great intro and can't do much better than that. No. So, Frank, what did you think when you first met Julius as well? Do you remember?
Yes, everything he said was very true. You know, I wasn't sure about what Australia means to our business 3 years ago. And he was one said, I strongly believe, you know, being a wealth manager for many years in Australia, your product could have a very strong audience in Australia. I was very skeptical. I didn't believe him. And then he was very persistent and then texting me, emailing me and saying, hey, you got to come to Australia, check it out. To see if we can work together, you know. So it took me several months to decide to make a day trip to Sydney from Hong Kong to see how real it is. And after I spent hours with him, you know, I was leaning towards giving him a shot. You know, several months later, I went to Sydney again to give a first presentation to many clients of Shaw & Partners, hosted by Julius. And then, you know, since then, we were able to attract, significant amount of capital from Australia. The last fund, feeder fund set up by Shaw & Partners, your firm, successfully invested in our last PE fund and contributed a significant capital base. And I expect that to increase significantly. I think what tells me the following, number one, Australia has got a very strong wealth creation. Number two is that increasingly I see Aussie investors who are successful, well-educated, and globally minded. They are really increasingly looking to diversify their investment holdings. Therefore, you know, more and more of these investors are becoming investors in our fund, and more and more come into what we do. So this is very encouraging. I really see now Australia being a very important capital base for our cutting-edge life science investments, and most of which are in the US.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. So, Frank, can you give us a little bit more of some background information on how you actually got into life sciences?
Yeah, you know, I know early on that I would never be a scientist, never be a medical doctor, or never be an engineer. I just happened to be born into a family of four doctors, including my mother. So I grew up with many doctors around me, and then I respect them a lot. including my family members were doctors. You know, they really saved, improved many people's lives. And after I got into finance, actually was at a Goldman Sachs, I started interact with my colleagues in a healthcare group in New York. So I concluded that, you know, this is an extremely technically demanding business. If you have the know-how, very few people are able to do what you're able to do. But also you need very strong knowledge and experience in financing. And therefore, I made my first life science investment in a medical device company 11 years ago, which did very well. And that was the turning point in my investment career. Ever since then, I've started to focus on life science. So it's been 11 years. Yeah, I would say since about 5 or 6 years ago, we decided, Island Bridge decided to focus only on life science investing and nothing else. So we are 100% dedicated to life sciences, but they all have to be cutting edge. Also, we're not an early stage venture capital investor. We primarily focus on those cutting edge life science technologies, mostly in the US, after proof of concept, and then many of which, the majority of which already post FDA approval, many of which are already generating significant revenue and are growing very fast. And that is the sweet spot of Island Bridge's investment universe.
Okay, so it's really late stage. Like you're saying, it's not a concept. It's an actual business model with a track record and FDA approval or on that track, which is interesting to hear. I guess taking it back a step, just a general question for you both, and I'd love to hear your perspectives. What is the checklist, the metrics, the investment kind of criteria that you look for just generally in the private equity space? What do you have to see there for you to go, I'm excited? Julius, you first.
For me and my client base, it's more about the nearer term to liquidity. We all like to see, I mean, we're all used to having the option, therefore, you know, people invest in the share market, having the option to liquidate it, you know, in the time that they warrant. But then in the other half of the client base, which would normally have maybe 90% of their net worth is in property, it is illiquid. So I think when they see private equity, I think both of those come into mind. And I think if we can get that 2 to 3 years with the view of liquidating with a meaningful return of 30 to 50%, I think that is 100% acceptable. And I find that majority of my client base and even myself to a capacity, I think a lot of these VC funds, although they can make tremendous amount of returns, you know, up to 1,000% and whatnot, I mean, you're stuck in there for a decade and it just seems like a very long time. It can sit uncomfortable. That's what I look for. What I also look for, and I think it's more than mandatory for most of us now or desirable, is the lack of volatility. We've seen a lot of it in the previous couple of weeks and even from October last year in the NASDAQ. Some of the top 200 NASDAQ stocks have fallen as much as 80%. Some companies that we never thought would ever do that. So I think if we can remove volatility and see a 30 to 50% return within, say, 2 to 3 years, I think it's very hard to beat that, and that's what I look for.
Yeah, and like you were saying, a real pure diversification that perhaps our market here in Australia can't offer. And Frank, what's your take on it, just generally in the private equity space? What do you look out for?
Yeah, I mean, private equity is a huge space, you know, so I'd rather focus on the space we focus on, which is life sciences investing, especially on the private equity side. Of course, you know, what Julius referred to are exactly the things we're looking for, you know, multiple costs of investment, how many X over how long a period, that translates into IRR, right? So, you know, multiples of return over how long equal to IRR based on the calculation. So I would just say that, you know, our having invested it across different stages of life science companies and across all different subsectors, you know, we really focus on our sweet spot. Again, we work very closely with some of the best venture capitalists, you know, who are extremely good at starting by companies, giving birth to those companies and then taking them through childhood and then a teenagerhood and then adulthood, right? But we are much more focused on, you know, those children that are already have proven they're very good in school. And then also they have a proven ability to get into the workforce, becoming a very successful employee or entrepreneur. And I think that's the kind of stage we're looking at. But also, very importantly, is that the impact. You know, we are a well-recognized brand. For us, the impact, what kind of technologies get into, how big of an impact we are having through that those companies on the life and death of patients, and also the quality of life. You know, so the bigger the impact, the more successful we see ourselves, in addition to great financial returns. You know, so this is a very much of a social impact driven business, and not only by money. We have to generate good returns, otherwise we're not in the business. In the meantime, all of our investments have to be very impactful in terms of actual benefits to human lives.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear, because I know not all fund managers are like that. So if we turn our focus to what you do best, Frank, which is obviously identifying the right healthcare company, could you go through your team's investment process before you decide to invest or not in a specific company?
Yeah, for us, it's a research. What we focus on is, extremely technical in terms of scientific, clinical, and also financial analysis. You know, so research is our number one focus. And then we got, I would just say we have over 20 well-trained people, experienced people, both investment professionals as well as career scientists. The overwhelming majority of our time, our effort really spent on researching, understanding the science, the technology, the clinical data, and also the commercial benefits, commercial gains. You know, I think these are the things that we focus on. And then after we have a very good understanding of the science, the technology, and the products, and then, the returns, then we focus on how do we get in. And I think now more and more business is very much brand driven. You know, we don't need to knock on other people's doors. People come to us for our brand, because the brand immediately adds premium to the value of the companies we're investing into, right? So at the end of the day, it's research. And then in the meantime, after we go into the companies, we have to be able to add value, whether it's in operations or in capital markets or in M&A for exits. So I think understanding the company is a first critical step, but after that, is that what you're able to do to create and to realize the value of the money we'll put into the company.
So there was obviously a lot of research going on last year, because 2021 witnessed an impressive surge in the private equity space. I think the inflows were around $151 billion in your sector, the healthcare globally. And when we were preparing for this podcast, we saw that inflows more than doubled, and the number of deals also soared 36% to 515. So Frank, I guess, what were the driving forces behind this explosion in the PE sector? Can we expect these records to continue? Like Julius touched on, it's very volatile at the moment in the markets. You know, what's your outlook and take on the PE space in the next, 2 years?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's a very fundamental question about how the global investment community treats investing in life sciences or healthcare. And I would say that the number one driver of a huge investment in healthcare was COVID. I mean, you saw this huge market sell-off upon COVID becoming a pandemic in 2020. But then, you know, we saw in a very sharp V-shaped recovery as vaccines were being developed at a rapid pace and effectively. And then, already injected into hundreds of millions of people around the world. And we saw the very powerful effects against COVID and its variants. You know, so I would say in recent years, really COVID being a very specific catalyst and a huge catalyst of investment in cutting edge life science, right? And then as a result of that, the whole global investor community realized that no matter what happens to the world, we must invest one more of the capital into life science innovation, because you know, every one of us, our friends and family, all the other human beings on the planet, will have to deal with these medical needs, and especially those unmet medical needs, which are many, many out there. You know, so, and also with the aging population, and yet, you know, wealth creation, increase the spending in healthcare, and also increase the investments in cutting edge life science technology to address so many unmet medical needs become inevitable and irreversible.
Yeah, well, that's kind of it, because the only thing really guaranteed in life is death and taxes, right? So healthcare is a really important place to invest. Now, aside from COVID, what other major trends are you seeing sweeping through the healthcare investing industry at the moment?
Yeah, I think the most fundamentally is the need to address unmet medical needs, okay? But, I mean, that need has been around for since we were ever, you know, existed, right? But then, you know, I would say that with scientific breakthroughs over the past several decades, especially driven by genetics, and then all the scientific discoveries that came out of that, you know, driving towards precision medicine, our ability, mankind's ability to address unmet medical needs, and also a huge capital market, in both the venture capital, growth capital, and a public capital market are huge. And, you know, investors become more and more sophisticated. You know, with all that, you know, this is definitely a sea change as an investment asset class in healthcare in general, but also increasingly in life science innovation.
And I guess one last question on COVID, because I'm sure us included and our listeners are probably over talking about it, but I guess what has been any opportunity that has been brought about by COVID-19 in your sector? You know, has it ramped up business models? Like, we keep hearing, you know, the advancement of technology is even more important because of COVID. What about the integration of digital tools like AI, and I guess the overall resilience of the supply chain, which we're hearing a lot about that COVID's disrupting? What are your comments and thoughts on that side in what you do on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, another great question. So I would say COVID has both positive and negative impacts on in our business in general, the life science business. I think, of course, the most positive by far is that it really proved, you know, great science really work with the right people and with a lot of capital behind it, supporting it, and also with a very strong government push to address this, you know, very, very critical need. And, you know, so that's a very, very positive. And, you know, that also helped to lift the whole sector of life science, right? I mean, look at how many billions of dollars of revenue have been generated from vaccine sales. And then more and more new products have been developed, you know. So in the meantime, as more and more capital are put into life sciences outside of vaccines, definitely some are working out. And so those are very positive. Of course, you know, COVID has also negatively impacted many of our business. You know, some of the many other types of diseases were put on the back burner just because, you know, hospitals prioritize the treatment of COVID patients. So many, many medical procedures were delayed or on hold. So that's certainly impacted those business, especially during the earlier month of the pandemic. And then the second is that the capital markets, especially the public capital market, is, you know, from hot to cold. You know, so they say, wow, you know, a huge dividend has been paid for the COVID vaccine place. And then all the other sectors may not be as fast as generating these concrete benefits, right? So we've seen a huge pull out of a lot of capital on the public side. But in the meantime, there's a lot of capital investing in cutting edge life science innovation on the private side and not so much impacted by the public market.
And we're going to get into that cutting edge life science interest that you're seeing. But before we do that, we're just going to take a short break to hear from our sponsors.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. All right. So as IPOs and SPACs are coming under increased regulatory scrutiny, do you think more healthcare companies are looking to stay private for longer?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. This is actually something that we've been thinking through every day. I would say we're very happy for ourselves, for our investors, that and then for those Shore and partners and clients, we invest in our last fund. The overwhelming majority of our portfolio, current portfolio, existing portfolio, are private companies. And we last year made great decisions by keeping some of our best companies private, despite all of the great temptations from the public market to go public, IPO through IPO or through a de-SPAC merger. As you may recall, last year in the U.S., SPAC was all the rage and then fell out of favor. You know, so looking back, we made a great decisions by keeping a number of our companies were extremely IPO or merger ready, kept them private. And so those companies are able to focus entirely on executing the business rather than being distracted by the hugely volatile public market. So we're very glad we made those decisions. So I think in this kind of market, staying private is an advantage if you were able to raise a lot of money before the huge market sell-off. Because if you are desperate for cash, this is a really a life or death juncture for many companies. But I'm very happily to report that you know, our companies were very well funded before the market crash, and they're able to ride through this extremely bearish market.
Great. Well, for our listeners' benefit, a SPAC is actually a special purpose acquisition company. So you've kind of answered our next question, basically saying that companies potentially are finding it harder to raise capital, but a lot of the companies in your funds are not because they're already fully funded before we've gotten to this kind of climate.
Yeah, so I would say that we've seen a roller coaster a ride with the SPAC. But, you know, even though it's an extremely difficult market segment, after several months of being all the rage on the public market, so we've seen a kind of 180-degree anticlimactic turn for the SPAC market. But still, they are several superstars that have done very well. And also we have our own SPAC and we're very well positioned. But I think the key thing is the quality of the asset. Second is, you know, the pricing of the asset. We believe with the great asset and then, you know, a very compelling pricing, there will be success, just like what we have seen with some of the successes against many, many disappointments.
Can you disclose what your SPAC is called?
ABGI.
Okay. Yeah. And focusing, I just want to turn our attention back to the fund just for a moment. How big of a role would you say AI is playing in the healthcare sector in general? And what proportion of the portfolio is allocating, you know, capital to these companies that are delivering really groundbreaking AI in the healthcare sector?
Yeah, I mean, AI is no longer just a concept, no longer just a bunch of geeks working on a computer work models. You know, we really see we're very much involved. In fact, I can talk about specific examples all in the public domain. AI is playing an increasingly important role in healthcare across the board. I mean, I will say one thing that certainly is becoming more and more clear is imaging. Using AI to analyze image, right? When you look at an MRI, a CT scan, also pathologists, you know, these businesses increasingly will be driven by AI. In addition to, you know, human input, you know, you've got a very experienced pathologist will always be useful, but they will, you know, increasingly leverage the power of AI more and more as these AI technologies become more and more mature and more proven with more and more data validating their value propositions, right? And then the second also, in fact, AlloBridge, and this is the public domain, you know, we recently have invested a significant amount of money in this AI-driven drug discovery company based in Cambridge, UK, which completed a successful de-SPAC merger with Europe's largest SPAC. So now, after the successful merger, in which AlloBridge played a significant role, we have been following the company for a while. Not only us, but also the Singaporean Sovereign Wealth Fund, Temasek, a giant global pharmaceutical company, AstraZeneca, you know, have all been investors in the company. And AlloBridge has been teaming up with these key fellow shareholders on helping the company to go to the next level to further validate the power of AI for discovering new drugs. And, you know, still early, but we've seen some very encouraging developments proven in the clinic. And there's a lot more to come as these technologies, as I said, becoming more and more proven in the clinic, not just, you know, in terms of the mathematical models, computer models, but at the end of the day, in our business, they have to be proven in the clinic.
Yeah, and that sounds like really great, groundbreaking technology in the drug space. So can you, you mentioned it was public knowledge, can you talk about the company so we can follow it?
You know, it's a Cambridge, UK-based company. And as, you know, obviously everything I talk about is in the public domain and is very transparent. They already discovered a number of novel drug targets and has shared that with their strategic partners, whether it's AstraZeneca, and also their first validation came in during COVID. They actually, through their AI platform, they discovered this drug that was commercialized by Eli Lilly for a different indication. But they discovered through their own AI engine that this drug could be very effective treating some COVID patients. So they took it to Eli Lilly. And then shortly afterwards, the drug was proven and it becoming a COVID drug. That was a great validation of this AI approach to discovering something so quickly and so cost effectively. And it's something that really works in the clinic as well as in the commercial market.
Look, in the listed space, we really do like Eli Lilly. And I think Candice and I have a little bit of research to do on that Cambridge University company. Now, your last fund, you invested $679 million over 20 different companies, which accounts for about 86% of the fund size. Am I right in saying that?
It's very close. In fact, we completed our 21st investment just last week. So we got 21 investments. The total investment of, nearly $700 million. So you're not far off. It's pretty accurate.
Not far off. And look, we also know that you invest in the fund yourself personally. So you really put your money where your mouth is, which is fantastic and something we tell our listeners to do. Can you give us an example of a recent investment that really stands out to you? Why did you invest in it? What have the returns been so far? And where do you see that investment going in the near term?
Yeah, I mean, we made several investments over the past several weeks. In fact, Australia has been turned out to be a very productive place for me visiting, because during the past several weeks, we closed three new deals. One I talked about is a Benevolent AI, this AI drug discovery company. And we were able to lock in some downside protection mechanisms for our investment, you know, so we're already so-called in the money on that investment. And then also we invest in a Silicon Valley medical device company called Arum Medical. This is not public yet, but I can say that we closed that investment. A public press release will come out very soon. And this is a post-FDA medical device company to treat nasal obstructions in the ENT space. Anybody who is a doctor, this is an ENT, ear, nose, throat space, and it's office procedure, very fast, and then with superior safety and efficacy, and already generating tens of millions of dollars revenue, and then growing very fast. And this is a very, very similar to the first two investments made by the last fund that Shaw Brothers, through your feeder fund, participated in, Pulmonix and Vancos, which were invested through the fund in 2019 and both exited. So this recent investment, Arum Medical, is very, very similar to those two, right? And also we invested in a life science tools company also in Silicon Valley. That is a single cell DNA sequencing and a protein analysis company. Because when people talk about precision medicine, in the most technical terms, there has to be based on the most precise understanding of the genetic mutations, and therefore single cell level DNA sequence and a protein analysis, and therefore we invest in that. You know, so these are good examples of our most recent investments. There's no, absolutely no kind of binary risk, and you know, already these companies generate significant revenues and very much de-risked, and there's still a lot more to come for their value creation.
I'd just like to jump in there while you're on that path of momentum, Frank, and just to address, Felicity, your question before about private equity and what I look for in private equity as an asset class in general, and Frank's attribute. The thing about private equity versus the buying shares on, you know, on the stock market, hold, hope, pray, I guess, passive investing, is that when you invest in private equity or back someone like Frank, Frank being a leader in his field, is that he's actively involved with the companies. He provides tremendous influence. He sometimes sits on the boards of companies. I think he sits on four boards currently. And it's about influence and guiding these companies. So that Alibridge is such a strong brand name, and it continues to become stronger and stronger, as therefore a lot of these companies seek Alibridge's tremendous deep dive due diligence and foresight, and also guiding them how the best way to access capital may not be via public listing, might be securing capital from their own fund, leading a capital round, which is exactly what Alibridge do. They lead and very seldom co-lead a round of financing for these companies. But also the mastermind behind it and Frank's in-depth experience is M&A, mergers and acquisitions, which he's been doing his entire life. And if he needs to find a strategic investor or work with strategics, that is what he does. That is what the fund does. So we're really talking about strategic investments that Alibridge is focusing on. And I find that really clears the path and speeds up the process of having these companies reach their goals a lot sooner than what they would have. And you're really dealing in a place and in the Northern Hemisphere where you're finding that there's a lot of activity in the M&A space, which we probably wouldn't find that much here in Australia. Like you'd find it 100 times multiple of mergers and acquisitions happening in that part of the woods. And just on another flip side, I mean, you know, you hear about companies in the fund, but what about all the companies that the other 99 companies that Frank turns away? There's some really funny companies. He was just talking to me. We were in the cab, I think the second roadshow, and he was talking to me about prostate removal guided surgery, which uses compressed water. So basically it's through the urethra, you remove it in an hour and you walk home and there's a zero chance of erectile dysfunction. I thought it was awesome. And he didn't invest in it. And I thought every guy would have gone for that. But anyway, just a bit of lighthearted entertainment here.
Oh, we love that. And I guess touching on the point you just raised, Julius, you are right. The fund predominantly is North American, US based. Over to you, Frank. Why is that? You know, why is Europe and Asia, and like Julius said, Australia, you know, there's not much appetite for that. And then I have a follow-up question for you, Julius, don't you worry.
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, I mean, the U.S. is by far the most advanced in life science innovation. And then by far the largest, the deepest, and the most liquid market for venture capital, growth capital, and public investing and M&A. Therefore, you know, so really the key drivers of our pivoting towards the U.S., number one is we only want to be involved in cutting edge technologies. I mean, you know, U.S. is not, you know, 100 out of 100%, but still great technologies in elsewhere in the world, in Europe, Asia, Australia, and others. But the U.S. has the lion's share of the most cutting edge technologies for many very good reasons. And number two, also because the capital market and every part of the capital market is so large, deep, and liquid. Therefore, in terms of further financing as well as the exits, because we are fund investors, we're not a charity or endowment. You know, we always have to focus on when to exit. Sooner or later, we have to exit. So if you don't have a very liquid markets for exits, this is a huge problem with us, with our investors, right? You know, so I would just say that the U.S. is by far the most liquid market for exits, whether it's IPO. Okay, I can tell you that for now, the IPO market, the secondary financing market, is pretty much shut down. But we also have now, you know, increasing active M&A market. And, you know, all these strategic, i.e. the big players in the industry, big pharma, big biotech, they have a multi-billion dollar war chest sitting there and looking for praise. That's the kind of market that we're operating. You know, so I think right now the public market is extremely bad, but we are very busy with our portfolio companies for strategic discussions with potential acquirers.
So that makes a lot of sense, Frank, I guess, because you're heavily involved in the U.S. Market. I would love to hear your insights in what you think the U.S. economy is looking like currently. We're hearing a lot that economists are saying supposedly inflation has peaked.
But actually, let me address that, volunteer to address that. I would say that I personally strongly believe the market will continue to be very volatile. There's no way I can call anything like bottom or, you know, inflation peak, because anybody who predict that will prove to be extremely take on a high risk, you know, with their credibility, because there are a lot of moving parts, because we have a huge geopolitical uncertainty on top of the inflation outlook in the U.S. You know, so it's a very, very dynamic interplay of multiple factors well beyond any of our control. However, as a private equity investor, this is a great window of opportunity. When you have a dry powder to invest, and then you are able to cherry pick the best assets, not the best, the bad assets, because in this kind of market, everything looks cheap. But then you only focus on the best assets on a much better valuation, and then just focus on executing the business without being distracted by what's going on in the public market. I think this is a golden opportunity for very well respected private equity investors.
All right. Well, to wrap it up, Julius, why do you think investors can't ignore an investment in the PE space? And do you think this decision is even more prudent given the current market conditions?
That's an excellent question, Felicity. I think that with the volatility of the market, and there's so many moving parts in the economy, that it's really, really difficult to predict where to go, where to hide even, and which asset class are predicted to be the best performing. And I think with the thing of private equity, you can really find refuge in terms of timing, in terms of you've got time on your side, you've got no volatility or low volatility, but also you're somewhat safeguarded to many factors in terms of, you know, when you're exposed to liquid assets, say, for example, money markets, currency exchanges and stock markets, you're in a whirlwind of volatility, especially the bond market with your question before on inflation. You know, rates are going up, the 10-year bond rate's at 3%. So, you know, people here in Australia pulling out their hair going, should I hold Commonwealth Bank shares yielding a 4%, or should I hold something risk-free 10-year bond rate at 3%? What do I do? So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. So you've got inflation going up, you've got potentially Russian threats, which are just unforeseen. You can't predict that. So I think with coming back to private equity, but even a step safer than private equity, healthcare private equity, which is a consumer staple and a somewhat proven over 100 years, a defensive space that humankind really need. That I think that with Frank's fund, that coming back to time on your side, when you're seeing valuations being compressed in equity markets, that eventually will flow through to private equity. And Frank is seeing it. And Frank, being a leader in his field, he is and will be picking up very, very high value assets on the back of that. And I think that once equity markets stabilize, in my career, I've been through the GFC, dot-com, Asia crisis, COVID, markets do stabilize eventually. This may take up to 24 months, but when they do, I strongly predict a valuation pop in Frank's fund.
Thanks, Julius. That is some really great insights. Now, as a fun way to end our conversation, we like to ask all of our guests the same question. So we'll ask you, Frank, first. Coffee, tea, or tequila?
Tea.
What kind of tea?
Green tea. Yeah, because for life science, green tea has a lot of antioxidants, which is healthier.
So we all need to drink a little bit more green tea. And Julius, I think I know what you're going to say, but coffee, tea, or tequila?
Tequila. Tequila, when you're dealing in financial markets, you must go to tequila. All roads lead to tequila. It's an upper, it's a natural probiotic. It ticks all the boxes and it makes me feel like I'm on the coast of Mexico.
Well, thank you guys for taking the time to chat with us. It's been really great and our audience is going to absolutely love this episode.
Thank you so much. Great pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Wow, that was a fantastic chat. I learned so much, Felicity, and I just really loved hearing all the insights into the private equity market and in particular, obviously what Frank's really good at, the life science space. Definitely need to do that research on that Cambridge company he was talking about, which is in the AI drug space. But before we sign off, guys, as always, as a reminder, please remember, although we are registered financial advisors at Shaw & Partners, the discussion today obviously does not constitute as personal financial advice. As always, you should seek professional financial advice before you make your investment decisions.
And please make sure you follow us on @TalkMoneyToMePodcast for daily market updates. And if you enjoyed this podcast, make sure you give us a review, 5-star only on Apple Podcast or Spotify. And remember, if you've got any questions or you'd like us to pass on anything to Frank or Julius, contact us at tmtm@equitymates.com. Until next time.
Ciao, ciao.
Talk Money to Me is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. Equity Mates gives listeners access to information and educational content provided by a range of financial service professionals. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Talk Money to Me are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Equity Mates Media does not operate under an Australian financial services license and relies on the exemption available under the Corporation Act 2001 in respect of any information or advice given. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find the ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Talk Money to Me acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.